Freak out, it's Halloween, the moon, the stars, everything is coming into a line as the Macho Man hologram gets ready to re-debut in the WWE, and when I come, I'm gonna take everybody out. I'm gonna start at the top with John Cena and work my way all the way down, right to Zack Ryder. I'm gonna take him out too. And there's nothing that you can do about it, Chris Walder.
Okay, so where do I fall on that totem pole? Am I higher or lower than Zack Ryder?
You don't work for the WWE, so you're not on the totem pole. That
just in the world of, just in life in general. How about that? Where do I rank?
Well, Zack Ryder still has a million Twitter followers, so where are you at Walder Sports?
I'm almost there. I'm not even close.
Right. As much as we may make fun of Zack Ryder, and Zack Ryder may not be employed for much longer, and we'll get into why right off the top, because, of course, the big news of the week, the WWE network number and their third quarter report came out, and boy, oh boy, is the World Wrestling Entertainment getting slammed, and not just by wrestling fans. We have moved into the realm of they're getting slammed by Wall Street. Came out today an article in the New York Post basically saying the WWE is getting ready to crumble. I don't know if we're quite there yet, but boy oh boy, things are not looking good for the WWE. And I want to give some credit to my co-host here, Chris Walder, because we, in preparation for the podcast, they said, you know, before these numbers come out, let's make a prediction and we'll vouch for each other. And my prediction was 800,000 subscribers. I was way off. Chris Walder came in at 720. The number was, as you probably now know, 731,000. Not too bad, Walder. You were in the ballpark.
And this is the part of the podcast where you edit in Bo Dallas's entrance music and you just stick your thumbs in the air and you say, "Believe in Walder." He called it, baby. I knew it. 800,000, please.
If you think I'm going to that much post-production for giving you credit, think again, buddy. That's not happening. Maybe we'll start with Bo Dallas. I don't have Bo Dallas's name. That's not happening.
No, we gotta rip that off of YouTube, buddy.
Yeah, we got to get that going. Maybe some Bo Leave. The WWE needs to Bo Leave. Let's try and break all this down if we can. Obviously, the WWE has been scrambling to come up with some way to make this network work. When you analyze the numbers, let's start there. 731,000 is only up 31,000 from the last time, although they did round up to 700,000. But the concerning part is when you dig into these numbers, they claimed on their conference call that 11% of those were international subscribers. Now, that says a couple of things. That says, number one, all their international subscribers that they were going to get, for the most part, are getting it illegally, and that's pretty much been proven by what's happened here. I think there's no question about that.
Yep, they figured out a way to just get it without having to pay the full price for it, which, I mean, we're not going to admit to anything, but it's simply easier, especially for us Canadian folk, because we're getting ripped off from the get-go. So WWE deserves it in that regard. But yeah, because that's all the folks in England basically figured out a way to get it for free, and good for them, because the WWE network isn't even really worth it at this point. And I'm actually surprised that the number hasn't increased. I mean, I would have gone with your 800,000, especially with all of the marketing they've been doing on television. You know, all the $9.99 hints and all the damn commercials with like the emo pop jingles and whatnot, and none of that has worked. So I think WWE, all of this bad press they're getting, I mean, me and you talked before the podcast, there was an article in the New York Post slamming the company for this whole network debacle, so they kind of deserve it, right? They're not doing hot.
Yeah, we're not even talking piracy here, though, Walder. Like, I'm talking about, like, international people that have went to the trouble of, they're actually paying, but they're finding a way to be American, for lack of a better term, and they have the network, and they're actually paying subscribers, but they're not legitimately in the United States. And that gets to my second point. If you trust the WWE's numbers, which, why would they lie when the numbers were so bad? They said 11% was international subscribers. Well, knock that 11% off of the 731. To me, then you come up with a number where their subscribers domestically in the United States actually are lower from the last quarter than what they were. Because you take off that 11%, now you're not talking growth anymore. You're actually talking regression in their numbers domestically. And that's just not good news.
Man, you must have been like a math major in another life, right, James? Because you're good with numbers.
No, not at all. In fact, I went into broadcast journalism because I don't like math. So
there you go.
But when it comes to statistics and money, I can make it work. Because those are the things important in life. That's the lesson, kids. The algebra, the physics, all that stuff. Don't go that far. If you don't plan on being a rocket scientist, just learn about your money and your stats, and you'll be okay.
And didn't WWE kind of expect the international numbers to be a safety net for them? Because they thought, you know, England, they're so popular overseas, that the numbers would, you know, help them out so much with their domestic decreases, which you just kind of alluded to, you know? Like, if those numbers are going down, that's terrible news for the company. And now they're kind of shelling out. They announced through Vince McMahon that they're going to be giving away Survivor Series for free. This whole thing just smells of desperation, James.
Yeah, we'll get to that. We're getting there. It's a lot of minutiae to get through, but
there's more numbers?
Well, no, but the UK technically hasn't launched. They launched November 1st because they got pushback. So
yeah.
The good news for the people in the UK, if there was any good news in all of this, is they, unlike us in Canada, are actually getting the over-the-top service, which is the U.S. model, which is great news for them, terrible news for us. Specifically, let's dive into the Canadian story for our Canadian listeners and viewers. What was also revealed in this conference call of doom was here in Canada, only 20% of our nation is able to get the WWE Network currently. And all of those people in that 20% are Rogers subscribers. So, in essence, Rogers still hasn't been able to market this or sell this to other platforms yet. And what we know from our Raptor dealings, the toxic relationship between Rogers and Bell. I mean, the most recent fight they've had is over the new TSN networks and Rogers picking those up. And it's gone on and on for years with these two companies battling in sports media. And if I'm the WWE, I don't know if they've done their homework, but I don't know if Rogers is the greatest partner for them in distributing this network across the country, because, quite frankly, Bell is not apt to take it. What's in it for Bell right now? Because they don't get to set the price. Rogers sets the price along with the WWE. They have no say in it. They just basically take the network as is, and that's what they get. And they have no WWE programming within their family. They used to. TSN used to broadcast Raw and used to have an interest in WWE, but that's now all Sportsnet 360. So why on earth would Bell be interested? And then you have all our friends out in the West who are on TELUS and Shaw, and what will those companies do in dealing with Rogers? Who knows? It's a mess, and the WWE tried to play it off like they're excited about the growth that they can have here in Canada, but good luck with that, because I think Rogers is not the most popular company in the world, and I think they're going to have trouble convincing other cable systems to go in on this with them.
And that's why WWE fans in Canada should feel royally shafted at this point. I'm not a Rogers user. I'm 100% behind Bell. I was actually with Rogers for a few years, and I mean, completely unrelated. I just hated the service and the connections that I was getting from them, so I quit, headed over to Bell. But, I mean, like you said, if you're with Bell, you have no access to the WWE network, and the only way this thing is going to be successful is if the network expands to other networks, and just because of, like you said, the reasoning, that Bell doesn't need it. So if there is going to be some sort of relationship formed where they can start distributing it, It's going to take a long, long time and a lot of money and a lot of convincing.
Yeah, and, you know, to sum up the stuff from the conference call, the last bits of news that came out of it, you alluded to one, new subscribers are going to get November for free. We no longer have our six-month commitment. In terms of content, they did mention a couple of the new shows that they're producing, the Rivalries one. They also alluded to the fact they're going to have about 500 hours more of content added to the network, which sounds like a lot, but when you dig right into it with all that they own, that's really not a lot. I mean, they already have 2,000 hours on the network, adding 500 more. I think that would just basically cover what they've been doing with releasing Nitros and Raws right now. I think that's your 500 hours right there. So you're not getting, for all the fans who want to see like old classic stuff like AWA wrestling, which WWE holds the rights to, here in Canada they hold the rights to Stampede wrestling, and on and on and on with all the libraries they own, we're still not getting that stuff. Like, I was talking with Josh on the video podcast, Condo on the Moon. I don't know if we actually said this on the podcast or when we were getting ready to do it, but the WWE Network, the launch in February when they had that massive rollout in Vegas, that was the high point of this network. Everything else has been downhill since.
Yeah, I can only imagine how much money this company is losing through the network. And now this new plan, only $9.99 a month, but you don't have the commitment. The commitment was kind of saving their ass for a bit because you were at least paying $60, and then you had the option to get out of your contract. But now you could realistically just pay for the pay-per-views that you want, and you're paying $50, $40 less than you normally would if you got it through your own provider. So where is the gain for the WWE? Sure, their network numbers might rise because of it, but those are going to fluctuate from time to time, especially, you know, maybe on the road to WrestleMania, and then after that when people just stop caring. Like, I don't see any sensible reason for doing this besides raising the numbers.
And when you get into this more and dig deeper, we get into the whole idea of it was made pretty clear we're not seeing Brock Lesnar at Survivor Series. Now we know why, because they're giving away the network for free in November, and obviously, how can you possibly justify the expense that is Brock Lesnar? And I think, honestly, in terms of just Brock Lesnar, this whole thing with the network, to me, guarantees Brock Lesnar is not going to be in the WWE after WrestleMania 31. There is no way in hell that they can justify what they're paying him and the amount of dates he does with the way this network is going. And it brings up other questions, like, can they afford all these, you know, drop-in superstars like they've been doing at WrestleMania for years and years? And what I've said on this podcast has been a Band-Aid solution. The network might be ripping off this Band-Aid, because can they really afford to pay The Rock now when you've only got people spending $9.99 for WrestleMania? Can they really afford, you know, a Steve Austin to come back out of retirement? And that'll take some convincing on its own. But all these big names that we're used to seeing, can they even afford to bring them back now at this point? Or are they going to have to come begging on hands and knees to The Rock, to Steve Austin, you know, do us a favor, can you do this on the cheap? And, you know, maybe The Rock will, maybe, I don't think Austin will, and Brock Lesnar certainly won't.
If Brock Lesnar loses the title at WrestleMania, he's gone for at least a year. I have no question in my mind about that. hell, Vince McMahon, you're right, he might have to grovel to some of these guys because there's just not enough money coming in, and how can they afford these top-level guys? Because right now, if you go into a WrestleMania, you know, without an Austin, without a Rock, you know, I mean, Lesnar's in your main event, of course, but you really have no other credible stars that you could justify a huge price tag for. You know, as much as we love the Ambroses and the Rollins and the Reigns of the world, like, they're not ready to, carry the company heading into the biggest pay-per-view of the year. They need these part-time guys to show up, but, again, unless they work on the cheap, you alluded to The Rock. You know, maybe he gives them like a homegrown discount just because his, you know, it's part of his heritage and his family's name and whatnot. Someone like Austin, hell no, he's going to be, you know, raising the bar and raising the price tag in the process. So it's just a convoluted mess, James. Like I'm really disappointed in the way this whole thing has turned out, but at the same time, I'm not surprised at all. I kind of called this from the very beginning. The WWE Network was going to be more of a hassle than it was worth, and it's proving to be the case right now.
Yeah, and if they had it to do all over again, I think there's no question the big four pay-per-views never would have been a part of it, and they would have done things differently. But now they've dove down the rabbit hole, and they can't get out. I mean, that's the thing. In doing this, they pissed off cable providers. They're never going to get back on pay-per-view like they used to be. I mean, they pissed off two of the major providers in the United States. That's not going to work. Like, they have rolled the dice on this network in such a way that they've... I don't mean, like, when I say this, don't get the wrong idea, people. I don't mean tomorrow or next year or 2 years from now. But if they don't turn this around, they've really put the future of this company in jeopardy. Like, do we see WrestleMania 40? I've never asked that question, but after what we've seen with the WWE Network, I'm starting to ask questions like that. Is there going to be a WrestleMania 40? Is there going to be a WrestleMania 50? And the WWE has never been in a state like that since probably dating back to, like, the original WrestleMania or when Vince McMahon had his infamous steroid trial. Those are the two points where I thought this company was in jeopardy like I feel it's in now.
They're between a rock and a hard place at this point. It's scary, you know, when you say something like, will they reach WrestleMania 40? And it's not a disaster yet because they're kind of just keeping things afloat with the network. But if you give it another year or two, we might be looking at this thing as another, like, XFL. Just a complete and utter failure that wasn't worth the money that they put into it. There's just been so many poor decisions going throughout, and I totally forgot, like, what you mentioned before with why didn't WWE just say, we'll give you all of these B-level pay-per-views like the Battlegrounds and maybe the Money in the Banks of the world, but then you have to pay for Survivor Series, Royal Rumble, SummerSlam, WrestleMania. That would have made sense because those are the pay-per-views that people will shell out for anyway. But, again, like, I want to know who's calling the shots here, if it's Vince or if he has people underneath him that are just screwing things up royally, because that's exactly what they're doing. There's no beating around the bush here.
And we mentioned this before the podcast. How sad was it to watch that little video that's been going around of Vince McMahon basically begging people to get the network by saying it's free in November, and doing the Daniel Bryan yes chant?
Yeah. You know what? Here's the thing. They wanted this probably not to compete with something like Netflix, but they wanted it to be Netflix light. They wanted it to be, you know, they assumed everyone is a wrestling fan. And in this day and age, this isn't, you know, when we grew up and the Attitude Era was hot and, you know, even the Hogans and the Savages of the world, wrestling isn't as big a commodity as it used to be, and people just don't want to spend $9.99 a month to watch old pay-per-views that they could basically get for free on YouTube or by other, you know, nefarious means or whatnot. So, and that's what people are doing at this point. They're just getting it for free off the internet illegally, or you know, through something, you know, like YouTube, which I do most of the time. So, again, there's always a way to beat the system, and that's what people are going to continue to do with this. And, you know, it's never going to be Netflix.
But in their defense, on the specific issue you're talking about, I think this whole idea was to combat piracy. Because I think what they were trying to do with the low price point was, look, $9.99, you're guaranteed, you don't have to worry about these feeds and blah, 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 and you get all this stuff. You know, it's not a lot of money. We're not like, I think WWE pay-per-views at some point became a joke in terms of the value. Like, when you consider what you were paying for pay-per-views back in the Attitude Era to what you were paying for pay-per-views that were nothing close to what you got in the Attitude Era, and you were paying more, I think people couldn't justify that in their heads. And, you know, so I think in that sense, I get their thinking process, but just everything, the marketing, the every step of the way, they have seemed to find a way to screw this up, and I don't know how they come out of it. And on top of it, it's been a year where they've had other issues to deal with as well, with injuries to top stars like Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan. We mentioned him, Vince, doing the yes chant. Daniel Bryan just announced he had to have that second surgery. They're talking like he's going to be out 6 to 8 months. No WrestleMania for him. He's out. You know, Bad News Barrett was a guy who was catching some steam. So, you know, they've had other bad luck hit them as well. It has not been a banner year of 2014 for the WWE. There's no question about that.
Yeah, like you said, with all of these big names being lost, the biggest one for sure, Daniel Bryan, which I feel terrible for the guy who has to go through another surgery. He was on top of the world not too long ago, and now he's just, people are slowly forgetting about the guy, and that's never a good thing. But you think about, you know, you mentioned Bad News Barrett. He's not a guy who's going to save WWE. Even a guy like Roman Reigns, who they're, you know, pushing to be in the main event of WrestleMania to take the title off of Brock Lesnar. I have every, you know, belief in the world that when the Royal Rumble comes, which I fully expect him to be a part of, he's going to get the Batista treatment, and this whole thing is going to blow up at WWE's face. Reigns is the next, you know, next big thing for the company. He's our shining star. He's going to be our next Rock or whatnot. No, it's not going to happen. And that's just because WWE, booking-wise, in terms of who they're pushing, and so many other problems, I have no faith. And the road to WrestleMania is just around the corner, and I don't really care, and I should.
Yeah, but they haven't really been able to get their feet on the ground creatively. I think there's too many questions up in the air right now for where their road to WrestleMania is going, because they just don't seem to have anything set in stone this year like they normally do. And
yeah.
It's a problem. I mean they, you know, on all levels, like the one thing I think people have to understand, the network and creative, even though they're separate things, and I was talking about this on the video podcast with Josh as well, they're connected. They have to be connected. Even though they may not seem like they're connected, they are. The reason CM Punk is not in this company, one of them, is the WWE Network. Because of the way it changed the way guys are paid and the structure of pay and all of that. That's part of the reason CM Punk's on the sidelines. Yes, he was banged up. Yes, he's hurt. Yes, he's fed up with a lot of things. But make no mistake about it, that was part of the issue too. And a million other things that tie to this. Like, you can't get away from the network being a distraction to creative. They are connected. They're joined at the hip. Whether they want them to be or not, they are.
I've been getting opposite reactions on Twitter, because I brought this up a couple of days ago, and I was thinking about Survivor Series, and it was just shortly after I heard the announcement about Survivor Series being for free. Do you think that creative is going to kind of mail it in just because, you know, the pay-per-view is free and no one's paying for it? So what effort do they have to show to give fans a worthy, you know, 3 hours of action? Or do you think it could go the opposite way, where they want to give them an A-plus show just because if they're going to get the network for free, they want to entice them to pay for it in the future?
I think they can't afford an A-plus show. I think that's the problem. Because if you had an A-plus show, Brock Lesnar's there.
That is true.
And that's the thing. But one of the things, if we can make any kind of a positive spin out of this, which it's hard. Believe me, it's hard.
Really hard, yeah.
I mean, we joked around on this podcast about we should have, like, that positive moment of the week. Remember that?
Yeah.
That whole idea went by the wayside because there just hasn't been, like, those moments that, you know, to be excited about or get excited about. It just hasn't been there. But the thing is, it's just it's all a mess. And I think if there is a positive, though, you hope that now you don't have that 6 month commitment. You hope that they feel creative takes this on in a sense of, we have to earn our audience every single month now.
Because they won't go that route, though.
Literally, that's what they have to do, though.
They won't.
Because if the audience, like, for example, let's take our Hell in the Cell pay-per-view, which, by the way, we are around 20, 25 minutes into the podcast, and we're talking about all this negative WWE news. Oh, by the way, they had a pay-per-view on Sunday, which no one's talking about. And let's go back to the ending of that pay-per-view. A lot of people were upset with that, with the hologram business, with Bray Wyatt. I wasn't one of them, but I'm going to talk about the people that weren't. Those people that were upset, the next morning, what do? They're subscribers to the WWE Network, and it's like this month-to-month basis now. They say, screw it. I'm canceling my subscription. I'm mad. Dean Ambrose didn't get to beat Seth Rollins. And that's a dangerous thing for the WWE, because now, as much as they claim fans have this power and all that, I got news for you. Now they really do.
It's a lame mindset, and I saw a lot of negative feedback from people just because Dean Ambrose didn't win. And yet he was probably the favorite going into the show just because he's gone months and months and months without picking up a victory over Seth Rollins. And then you see Bray Wyatt return. There was reports leaking earlier that day that Wyatt's first feud upon coming back was going to be against Ambrose. So I figured, okay, if Dean and Seth are main eventing Hell in a Cell, which they did, we're probably going to close the show with a Wyatt appearance, which I didn't really have a problem with. I like the hologram. I like the smoke coming up. I like the, you know, his what is it, like his Pig Latin or his French, whatever he was doing, and when the lights went out, I thought that was cool. And now you can kind of push this Rollins Ambrose feud to the side for a moment. You have Ambrose feud with Wyatt, and maybe you pick it up again with Rollins heading into WrestleMania. That's always a match you could throw together again. Maybe you have Ambrose finally get the victory over Rollins on the big stage. But for now, if people are going to say, yeah, well, you know, the WWE Network and Hell in a Cell, it disappointed me because Dean wouldn't win. Yeah, it's stupid, but you're absolutely right. They have the power now, and they could say, you know what, screw you. This is not what I want to see every week, so I'm not going to give you my money, and you have to earn my trust back.
And a lot of the WWE audience, quite frankly, isn't as dumb as the WWE makes them out to be, or treats them, I should say. And like, they figure this stuff out, right? I mean, these whole things with hijacking Raw and all that, those are fan-based things. If fans figure it out, which I'm sure they already have, like, now you're almost having to play to a very snarky internet-based crowd, and history in wrestling shows that's not a recipe for success creatively. WCW was famous for doing that. It blew up in their face. TNA has tried to do that from time to time. We know the state of that company. I mean, this is not a road that the WWE wants to go down, and if they don't go down it, well, then they're going to suffer the consequences with their network, and I don't know where the great answer is there. There's a lot of layers to this, and I don't think we quite understand all of them at this point, but it isn't good. That is the bottom line. It isn't good at all.
I want to go back to the archives and look at some of our podcasts, because this might be the most depressed we've been talking about wrestling. These numbers really brought down the mood.
Oh, yeah, and I mean, I think, you know, and people are saying, well, why are they talking about all this business stuff? I don't care. I just want to talk about wrestling. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, the WWE has to be profitable. It has to make money. If it doesn't make money, they're going out of business at some point. Now, people say it's a gigantic company and all that, and that's true. But if the trends keep going in the direction they're going, it can still end. Look at WCW. I mean, it was owned by a friggin' billionaire in Ted Turner. They were on top of the world. They beat the WWE for 84 straight weeks. And they were out of business inside of a year and a half. I'm not saying that's going to happen with WWE here, but, you know, all kinds of stuff is going on. And, I mean, you've got these BS rumors going around that, oh, the McMahons are going to sell. I don't think that's going to happen. But that's what people on Wall Street are starting to talk like. And, I mean, you know, rumors can be damaging when they get out of control like this. And I think the public perception outside of the wrestling bubble is the WWE's in serious trouble right now.
People only think that when you're in the wrestling industry that all it would take for you to go out of business is for another wrestling company to elevate themselves and then just kind of push you to the side. Like what we saw with WWE kind of kicking WCW out. That's not the case. WWE could still go out of business. It doesn't matter, the TNA, ROH, New Japan, whatever. They could just go out because they're not making money. And there's a ton of other outlets that people could go to for entertainment. They don't need to watch the Ambroses and the Cenas every week to get their fix. You know, there's sports. There's good shows coming out. Like, people have options now. And let's be honest, people who are paying $9.99 a month right now for the WWE Network aren't casual fans. Those are the diehards. And what we talked about just a few minutes ago with fans getting pissed off with the direction the company is going, you can't piss off the diehard fans. You need to embrace what they're feeling. You need to take to heart what they're saying, because those are the ones paying for the network, not, you know, the one person who's turning on Raw maybe once every couple of months. That they're not paying for the network.
Yeah, but at the same time, in order to grow the business, they have to expand outside of those hardcore people, and now they have to cater to them. It's like a catch-22. They're really in a bind here.
But I don't know how you do that, though. How do you cater to someone who's only watching wrestling maybe 10 times a year? You can't do that through the network, because you're saying, well, you can get all of these nostalgia moments. You can go back in the 80s and 90s and watch some of the best wrestling ever. Well, maybe they don't care about that.
And that's the other thing. Like they tout things like Total Divas, but we talked about that, I think, on the show last week or the week before. Total Divas isn't a crossover audience. It's not working. Like, WWE had a pay-per-view on Sunday. Total Divas rating went up. It didn't go down. Like, the audience isn't crossing over. Like, it's great that they're on the E! Network and the girls are getting this platform, I guess, and they're becoming more well-known, but if it doesn't translate into dollars, really, does it matter at this point? And overall, the ratings on Total Divas this season have been down. They're not up. Like I think the Total Divas fad is quickly eroding. Like, if that show's still on the air 2 years from now, I'd be shocked.
Why they're adding all these new faces to the show, right? Like Alicia Fox and Paige, that'll boost the ratings, right, James?
I don't know.
No, the answer's no. The answer is hell no.
Well, so you're going to get in Alicia Fox's doghouse again. That's where we're going here.
Is she face now? What's the deal with her?
I don't know. She's frenemies with Paige, I guess.
Should I really be bashing Alicia Fox based on our history?
No, you shouldn't. I don't think you should have went there.
I don't want to get ripped apart again.
Anyway, so Alicia Fox, if you're listening, we apologize for the comments of Chris Walder, and those do not necessarily reflect those of Condo on the Moon. Oh, by the way, a little while back, you know, I gave you credit for your network number, but where was my credit for before all the dirt sheets came out last week on this very podcast? Who said Dean Ambrose, Bray Wyatt? Who was that brilliant person?
Wow, you really went far with that one, James. You said, Bray Wyatt and Dean Ambrose. Who? No one could have thought of that.
Hey, but I thought of it before.
Yes, you did. I'll give you a little bit of credit. You're giving me too much credit. You're thinking I'm such a nice guy. I'm kind of a dick.
Apparently.
That's the role I play on this podcast, James.
Apparently, Alicia.
Is that how this works? This is the dynamic we have here.
No, I don't think so. I like you.
Not a lot, but you like me.
Do we have to go to like relationship counseling or something, Walter? Is that what you're saying?
We got to go to the same guy that helped Brian and Kane out, you know? What was his name again?
Dr. Shelby!
Can
you imagine if we could get him as a guest? That would be hilarious.
That would be hilarious.
Dr. Shelby.
Oh, God. We need to work on that. That's our next big get.
No, that's not happening, but it would be fun. If anyone could get that one, that would be fun. I would promote it on this podcast. I would enjoy that. But, it's tough times with WWE, and I don't know what to say. It's kind of dampened my spirits with the Raptors' big win to start off the season.
We need to do, like, an anger collage or something.
Yeah, and Kane is still in this company, by the way.
Oh, Kane!
I guess to close it out with all this stuff, they talked in the conference call. They weren't exactly clear about it, but they didn't seem like we were going to see a whole spree of firings But still, there's got to be some people on this roster that are worried.
Zack Ryder!
Yeah, that's the name I was going to say. Zack Ryder, ooh, you know it. Not in the video game, but his belt is. Well, that's great for Zack. I don't know if you get a paycheck for that, Walder. I don't think you do. But
is his belt really in the game?
Yeah, it is.
And he's not.
And he's not. So there you go.
Oh, my goodness. He's so fired.
Anyway, Curtis Axel as well is not around. And we saw the return of Ryback this week as we transitioned into more of our normal wrestling talk. But Curtis Axel, obviously a guy that I think would be at the top of that chopping block, too. So those are two names. And, you know, obviously there's lots of names that we don't know down in developmental that you would worry about them maybe saying, you know, we're done with you. So it's interesting. Oh, and here's the biggest blow of all that I heard this week, Chris Walder.
What?
Mojo Rawley injured, out on the shelf, the next superstar that was going to save this company. What are we going to do?
Mojo! Wow, who cares?
Exactly. Yeah. Anyway.
Too much sitting on people's chests when he his damn finishing move.
Yeah, that's number one when Mojo comes back. New finisher. That's where you start.
And by the way, I completely disagree with Curtis Axel, you thinking he might be on the chopping block because of they've actually had articles on WWE.com saying the relationship that he has with The Rock. And he actually, I think he helped The Rock train for his first match back, whether it was the Survivor Series 1 or WrestleMania or whatnot. So the last thing you want to do is piss off your big-name stars, and if that means keeping Axel around, maybe you just keep him backstage, an agent or an NXT trainer or something. Curtis Axel has value. I wouldn't cut him by any means.
Do you really think The Rock cares about Curtis Axel?
I think he cares, yeah, absolutely.
He does not.
I think he cares because of who his father is, and the fact that he helped him train, yeah, I think he would stick up for him.
Maybe because of his father, but I don't think The Rock is not coming back to WWE based on Curtis Axel's employment.
No, but he would he would help him out, though. I think he put in a good word for him.
Yeah, that's fine. A good word will get them all of... how many subscribers will that get, Walder?
I don't know. Screw the subscribers. I gave you my damn prediction, and that was gold, baby. It was gold, Jerry, gold.
Yeah, well, you're not giving me credit for my prediction, so no more praising you on this podcast.
But you have praised me, though, so that's all that matters.
Yeah, I know.
All right, there you go.
Anyway, while we're on the topic of NXT, Kevin Steen, it looks officially, has a new name, and I like it. Kevin Owens, obviously, for people that are familiar with Kevin, he has his son, Owen, who is named after Owen Hart. I like it. And Triple H, for whatever you want to say about Paul Levesque, lived up to his word. He said on a conference call for one of the NXT events, those three guys were all going to have input into their names, and they were going to be changed, but they would have input. I think it's been clearly made very clear that both Hideo Itami, formerly Kenta, Finn Balor, formerly Prince Devitt, and now Kevin Steen, now Kevin Owens, have all had impact in choosing their names to go with. And I think, you know, good for the WWE in that sense.
We're just happy that we can still call him Kevin. I think that's a big plus in our book. And you're the biggest Kevin Steen, Kevin Owens fan there is, James.
Yeah.
You must be loving this.
I'm very happy for Kevin. I mean, it's looking like they're putting a lot of care into bringing him in NXT, and they're treating him with the amount of respect that, quite frankly, he's earned, because he was one of the top guys on the independent scene. There's no question about that, and anyone who's worked with him sings his praises. They really believe that Kevin Steen will rocket to stardom in the WWE, and you know what? Nothing's for sure with that company. Let's make that perfectly clear. But I agree with the line that Mike Bennett said on this show about Kevin Steen. If he doesn't make the WWE millions of dollars, it's their fault.
Who said that?
Mike Bennett said it on this show.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest, or I'm not certainly not as big a Kevin Steen fan as you are, but I understand how talented he is. and the value that he could bring. But again, you can only work with what you're given in sports entertainment, and creative has to give him something good. And if they do, the sky's the limit for him, just as the case for Hideo Itami and Finn Balor, who's debuting on NXT next week.
Oh, yeah. See, I always forget. Once the spoilers come out, it's like, oh, yeah. It's like, but yeah, yeah.
Well, so the Ascension attacked Itami on the last episode, and then he did a backstage promo bringing help next week, and we know through the spoilers that that's Prince Devitt.
See, I'm already up to the Kevin Owens debut with my NXT.
And we still think he debuts at the next NXT show, right?
He's on the sign for the show.
He is on the sign.
I mean, I know that always hasn't panned out with WWE, but if Kevin Steen is healthy and 100%, I don't see why he isn't.
I still love the picture of Sami Zayn winning the title and then the show closing with him staring down Owens. I think that would be a beautiful move on WWE's part. Closes out the new year. You head into 2015 doing a Zayn versus Owens feud for the NXT title. Whew! IWC would be peeing their pants.
You see, and that's the thing. When people talk about positive in the WWE, the only thing they talk about is NXT.
Because NXT deserves the praise, and Triple H is doing a hell of a job with the recruiting that he's doing and the way he's booking that show. And it, again, it also helps that it's only 1 or 2 hours, you know, based on if it's a taping or whatnot. So, I mean, again, we need to get to the point where Triple H has 100% say over everything WWE, but that's not going to happen until, unfortunately, Vince just goes away.
Just creative. I mean... Just the creative part, yeah. Like, because obviously, when it comes to creative, I don't think Vince is with it, quite frankly, with what he's been doing of late. And Stephanie has proven over her time that creative is probably not her strong suit either.
It's because Triple H listens to the fans and he reads the bloggers and the tweeters and the all the wrestling sites, and he understands what people are looking at because. But if Vince McMahon was running NXT, he could have easily just said, you know what, screw it, Tommy, screw Balor, screw Owens. We're really going to bury these guys and have to force them to work their way up. But Triple H knows the history of these three, the way they were booked in the independents, the stars that they were. So when you bring them into NXT, you make them important. You recognize the fact that they were Kenta, Prince Devitt, Kevin Steen. I mean, when Kevin Owens debuts, we're totally going to get some sort of, you know, Kevin Steen name drop, whether it's in his entrance video or when he does his debut promo or whatnot. So, again, slap on the back, high five to Triple H. I just want to see more of it on the main roster where it really matters.
Yeah, I guess it's kill Kevin kill now, right?
Kill. Well, they're not going to do that.
Oh, they are. The fans will.
They're not going to sell T-shirts that has kill anything on it.
I didn't say they were going to sell T-shirts. I said the fans were going to chant it.
Kill Kevin Kill.
Yeah, that's going to happen.
Could.
But, yeah, no, if Vince ran NXT, Mojo Rawley would be your NXT champion.
Oh, my God.
And then they'd have another problem because Mojo's out injured.
No.
They'd have to have a tournament for the new NXT champion. Oh, no. But in all seriousness, it has been a rough week for the WWE. There's no question about that. And, I mean, it's tough. Like, I don't know where they're going with this. And I think their main event for Survivor Series is not something that really is going to capture the imagination of wrestling fans. I mean, I love the Survivor Series. I'm old. I remember the old days where we'd have the teams and the funny names. And I talked about this with Josh. You know, you'd have the Hulkamaniacs versus the Million Dollar Team. And it was great. But in 2014, Survivor Series isn't the draw that it used to be. And when you're putting all your top stars into a match like that, that really drains out your card. And I'm very skeptical of what we're going to see at Survivor Series. And as you've mentioned on this program, we're leading to Team Nikki and Team Brie.
See, going back to the Team Cena versus Team Authority, though, they're using the same formula that they've used for basically the entire year, where they want fans to tune in because they're teasing that John Cena might turn heel. And they've had these interviews with Triple H and these in-ring segments saying, you know what, Cena, your time is running out, son. The future is coming, and you're gonna be knocked down a few pegs. And then Cena's going to have to assemble his team. We're assuming that Dolph Ziggler is going to be a part of it, and on the authority, Seth Rollins and Kane are almost a given. Now it's just a matter of, do you see Triple H lace up his boots? Do you see Mercury and Noble getting into the match? Oh, my God.
Hey, I could see it. I mean, it's possible.
Oh,
because
that's awful.
Let's put it this way. If Dean Ambrose is not on the good guy side with John Cena, I think you definitely see Mercury and Noble, because if Dean Ambrose is in there, I can come up with your five for the bad side, because Bray Wyatt will get entered into the authority side.
No, I'm thinking about this match as if Ambrose and Wyatt aren't involved. They have to do Ambrose versus
Wyatt.
Yeah,
they're not involved, then yeah, definitely you're getting one of the Stooges or both of them in it.
So right now, if you had to book both sides, and we're assuming are we thinking it's four or five guys?
It's five.
It's five?
If it's traditional Survivor Series, which they've said it is, then it'll be five on five. So you'd get, right off the top, we've got we've mentioned the four that are in it already. Ziggler and Cena on the babyface side, Seth Rollins and Kane. Randy Orton is going to fall on one side or the other. I think he falls on the bad guy side.
Agreed.
And that's where we get the actual turn. I think because of the fact that Triple H is not an idiot and sees what's going on between Rollins and Orton, I think he will put himself on the bad guy team as well to try and keep the peace between those two. So that's four for the bad guys. And then I see maybe Mercury or Noble as your fifth.
No, I don't. If they're having Mercury and Noble, they're doing both of them. They're not going to have one. So the fifth spot.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Here's what I think will happen. I think originally you will get both of them, and then Triple H is going to step in and take one of them out.
But how do you decide which one?
Because one will get taken out of the equation by Dean Ambrose or somebody. It'll happen.
Ambrose?
Yeah, Ambrose. Cause
someone who's not even involved.
Well, he has been involved with them, and maybe he'll take him out. Somebody will take him out.
Well, who do the faces get?
Well, they've got...
Don't even say the Usos.
The Usos are probably going to be in there. They are noted John Cena friends. They are part of the C Nation. I could see it. In all honesty.
If you want to go with a huge stretch, and because we don't know what his rehab has been like, there is a slim chance that Roman Reigns is a part of Team Cena.
Could be. Another guy who's going to be back, Wade Barrett. Wade Barrett could be on...
I would like to see that. I just don't see how that would make sense.
Well, because they do the cheesy John Cena promo where he says, "You know what, Authority? I've got some bad news for you."
Oh, that would be kind of cool.
Yeah,
not really cool, but it would. I'd be interested for the 30 seconds that takes.
So John Cena saying something cool. It's probably not happening. But
that's how Cena gets over. He does chants of popular wrestlers like the Yes Movement, and I'm afraid I've got some bad news. And later in the year, he'll be pumping his arms back and howling like a wolf into the air just to get the Roman Reigns fans on his side.
Oh, boy. By the way, as an aside, did you happen to see the Monday Night Raw, like, you know, the going back in the Attitude Era thing that they did on Goldberg?
No, I heard good things about it, but I haven't had a chance to see it. Is it bad to you or what?
No, I'm not. It's just a specific moment from that episode that I want to talk about. John Cena is saying this. Now, picture this in your mind.
Okay.
You know, things were going really great, but at some point after you beat everybody week after week, it just gets tired and old, and, you know, what's next?
Really?
He said that about...
That's the pot calling the kettle black.
Exactly. And I thought that was just horrible.
The irony.
I mean, hello?
There's a reason why Goldberg got over with that damn streak, because he was a certified badass and he never said a damn word. Cena is just corny and cheesy. If he were to ever go on a 150, 160 winning streak or whatever, people would just be so fed up with WWE, they would be throwing their TVs on the ground and giving them a friggin' five-knuckle shuffle in the process.
But, I mean, he does always win. He always comes out on top in the end. And, I mean, he, like, does he not see, like, it's just, it's so, I don't even know.
That was one of the biggest, that was one of the biggest moments I'll ever remember as a wrestling fan, back in the day with WCW, Goldberg's streak. That kept me interested in their product. And he was, he at one time, he was the biggest star in professional wrestling, WWE, WCW, everything involved. And they should have never ended it, as far as I'm concerned, with the Kevin Nash Starrcade moment. And they had such momentum with him, and it just went downhill ever since, when he lost.
Well, everything about
another guy.
Everything about it. Like, I mean, you can even go back to when he won their title.
Yeah.
I mean, they put that on a Monday Nitro. Like, really?
Which was a dumb move.
That was their biggest crowd ever.
Yeah.
And it was for a television taping. Like, hello?
Which gave him, like, 3 days of promotion. That's it. 'Cause I think they announced it on Thunder, right?
Yeah. That part doesn't matter. They got their rating. They got their full house at the Georgia Dome. I mean, I that part, that's fine. But, like, the money that they could have gotten out of pay-per-view for that, and more importantly, the feeling that would have had, because that would have felt like a WrestleMania. Like, when did you ever watch a WCW pay-per-view where it felt like WrestleMania?
That would have been the defining moment for WCW if they would have been smart enough to get that match on pay-per-view. And I've seen plenty of documentaries looking back at the history of that company, and they always look back at that night and the lack of promotion. That if they had given that 2 weeks of build, of proper build, and said, we're going to put like Goldberg versus Hogan for the title at a Starrcade, the buy rates that show would have done would have been through the damn roof, and they already had 40,000 people coming in to watch one of their hometown guys, because Bill Goldberg was an Atlanta Falcon for a little bit, and he goes in there and beats Hulk Hogan for the title. Are you kidding me? Horrible management on their part. They screwed it up big.
Yeah, but you know what? WWE is apt to make the same mistakes. I mean, there's the famous story with Steve Austin. They wanted him to job out to Brock Lesnar on Monday Night Raw, and he said, no, I'm not doing that, and he ended up going home.
Yeah.
I mean, so, like, it's not to pick on, like, that's the one thing I find, and I guess we're coming full circle and we're going back to the WWE Network again. The one thing about their original programming that I find, you know, a little bit disturbing is it's like, so propaganda-based. Like, everything that's said about WCW is like, oh, it was great, and then this happened. And it's like, and then they just start burying WCW. And it's like, you know, it's the same with all their original programming. It's kind of like the WWE Network, in a sense, through their programming, it's their own propaganda machine. And honestly, I guess, you know, that's what it's supposed to be, but it doesn't entice me as a fan to go watch that stuff.
You would think someone in WWE would look back at what WCW thrived at during that time, because they kicked WWE's ass for a good stretch, over a year or so. They must have been doing something right, and of course you're going to kick them while they're down and, you know, kind of bend the truth on how well they did. But that's why I don't go out of my way to watch these like Monday Night War videos on the network, because I think it's just bullshit to begin with. They beat around the bush with a lot of stuff, and they don't tell the entire story with a lot of things, but that's because this is WWE's angle on WCW and not WCW's angle. So,
yeah,
whatever, it is what it is.
It's the whole thing. The winners get to tell the history, but it's not all that appealing. The other thing I don't like, too, is so much of that Monday Night War show, and I assume that rivalry show is the same way, is archival footage. It's not new footage. Like, when they do the interview clips, they're old interviews. Like, I've seen most of them.
Yeah.
Like, when I watch a show, oh, I remember that Austin clip, or I remember that this and that. So it's not, like, And it's cheap programming. And again, it goes back to the companies losing money. They don't want to put a lot of money into things. This is a way to put out a show that's cheap. And, you know, if you've invested all this money and you have so much riding on this network, you know, doesn't it make sense that you have to follow through and spend a little money on content? I mean, it seems almost illogical not to do that at this point.
I always caught that when WWE kept putting out, I think they had like 3 or 4 NWO anthologies in like 8 years, in an 8-year span. And if you watch every single one, you would notice that they use the exact same like Eric Bischoff interview from like 2002 and Hulk Hogan clips from 2004 with the same background, the same answers. They didn't show anything new. And with the network, you'd think they would go out of their way to just say, you know, make a few phone calls, see if anyone was interested in coming back, and just, you know, they have maybe say the same thing again, but at least it'll be up to date. They don't even want to do that.
Yeah, it's just, it's weird. And, you know, you go behind the scenes a little bit with the WWE when they produce this kind of stuff. Like, take, for example, the Paul Heyman DVD, the interview with Paul Heyman. Paul Heyman has said on the record, that was 12 hours they sat down and talked with him.
Like, oh, wow.
There's no way they're going to use all that, but at some point they are. They're going to bring it back when they need it, and
right.
That's what they do with all these interviews. They're, like, long, tedious. Like, if you're out there and you've ever watched, like, the RF video stuff where they do, like, the shoot interviews.
Yeah.
WWE is very much the same thing, what they do for their documentaries, but it's much more professional in the sense because they just pull out the little clips, where with RF video, it's just kind of a guy sitting there talking to a guy on a camera, which is, you know, it is what it is.
Bush League cheap, right out of a college dorm, you know, lame sex tape-esque cameras that RF video uses, so...
Chris Wall, they're not going to be working for RF Video anytime soon.
No, I actually watched some of their stuff recently. I saw the shoot interview they did with Ricardo Rodriguez, and because I heard he was going to talk about some of the racist comments that were made towards him and whatnot. And
he was a bitter. We talked about that a couple weeks ago. He was a bitter, bitter man.
I watched the highlight video when we last talked about it, but I saw the full one, and
was he any less bitter in the full text?
You know, he was way more just vengeful against WWE, and talked about all like the Bumblebee comments and whatnot, and
yeah.
I was like, it was hard to watch just because of the grainy video too, you know. But someone we can appreciate this though, because we both you know, studied journalism and whatnot, and
absolutely.
All of the little nuances with camera work and lighting, and that's why we love these DVD features with Paul Heyman. Sure, he sat there for 12 hours, but damn, did he look good!
Yeah, there's one thing I will never discredit the WWE on. They know how to make a friggin' documentary.
And video packages in general.
Oh, yeah. Like, they're outstanding. Like,
yeah.
I had talked with a buddy of mine who now works for Fox Sports, and he used to do all the DeMar DeRozan mixes that were out there on YouTube and stuff like that. I don't know if you've seen them before.
Well, who is it? Who does them? I know names.
Yeah, it's on Twitter he'd be Game Entertainment.
Yep, I know who that is.
Yeah, so he works for Fox Sports, and we had gotten into a conversation, and he even said, and he's not a wrestling fan at all, the stuff the WWE does is just phenomenal. Like the editing job they do, and he's an editor, so he would know. Like, it's top-notch, first-class stuff. It's funny, though, we get into this whole topic of shoot interviews, because I wanted to actually talk about one to close out. I talked a little bit about it with Josh Lopez, but I got to see the Michael Elgin shoot interview where he talks about his... shortened departure from ROH, I guess we could call it, because he's now technically back, but...
It was a vacation, essentially.
I don't think it was a vacation. I just think it's all very weird, Chris Wilder, because I think, you know, I don't think those two parties were on the same page for this whole thing. And it was interesting to hear his side of the story, and... Granted, he seems to have a lot of beefs with the booking committee at ROH, and quite a few other things, and the whole, there was apparently a big screw-up in terms of his visa, and that's how he ended up getting stuck here in Canada, and all of that, but I didn't, at the end of it, I really didn't feel that sympathetic towards Michael Elgin after hearing his side of it. I mean, I think, you know, it's all great to say all the stuff he did, and I'm not here to say that ROH, you know, was wrong or right or whatever, because I don't know. But at the end of the day, there's a certain... things change when you're the champion of a promotion and a company. You're required to do more. You have to do a lot more. And you're not just representing yourself at that point. You're representing the entire company. And as much as we don't like him, and we have lots of problems with him, John Cena, or Cena, is the just absolute model of that. Not necessarily in a good way, but he's all about representing the WWE. And I think Adam Cole, to in a much better way, was that with Ring of Honor. I think Michael Elgin, he was representing himself.
Just going into business for himself, kind of being a poor sport, in a sense. I'm an Elgin fan in the ring, but and I don't know enough about him outside, and like his issues with ROH, which you're definitely more informed about. But it's not painting him in a really good picture at this time.
He was just saying, you know, like about the booking, and like he wasn't getting the long term stories for things, and he was promised the title on numbers of occasions before he actually ended up getting the title, and this and that and the other thing, and then he talked about, you know, once he got the title and stuff like that. It's just, you know, I don't know. It's just, he says, you know, he loves and he cares about ROH, and I believe him. And he also says that he was hurt by all this stuff that happened, and I believe that too. But at the same time, I also believe that, you know, he wasn't a guy that was representing the company or that title the way that you're supposed to. Maybe, you know, maybe they mend it all and they bridge fences, but this angle they're working right now is really strange. Like they've turned this into an angle, which we knew they would. And he showed up at the Florida TV tapings, which in the shoot interview he claims ROH was threatening legal action against him, which I think now we're into a work, because he comes to those tapings and he just basically laid down to get pinned.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what's going on with it. I don't think it's a good look for ROH at the moment, though. And, you know, who knows with him? Who knows what the future holds with him? But, you know, like, Ring of Honor, you know, they're a company that I think, when we talk about all these companies that have been having trouble this year, mm-hmm. Ring of Honor is the one company that, you know what? They're doing all right. I mean, they've had their issues with Elgin. They've had some bumps in the road. Certainly, having Kevin Steen be part of the WWE developmental and not with them obviously hurts them to some extent. But, you know, they've been doing big numbers. They've had a decent year overall. And they announced now they're getting a distributor for action figures now, and that's kind of a step to being that, you know, next level big time company. And I really think, at least internally, that company wants to be considered, you know, on par with a TNA and as an alternative to the WWE, and I think they're taking the steps to do that.
One can only hope anyways. And let me tell you, the ROH that me and you attended, the ROH show that me and you attended, it was one of the best times I ever had watching wrestling, and I root for that company to succeed. I want them to make it. I don't know where, you know, what qualifies as making it, but they've had a really good year, and the best year in wrestling, even better than WWE's.
And one thing of note that you may take something from this thing. Did you notice when we were at that show? Did you notice any kind of extra security?
Not really. Why?
Because Elgin suggested that they had extra security there in case things went a little awry with him giving up the title to Jay Briscoe.
Seriously?
That was said.
They thought that was going to be the case?
That was said in the shoot interview, and Elgin said it was ridiculous because he's a professional, and of course he would give up the belt, and he did.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's not... I'm very conflicted about this whole thing, because I think Michael Elgin is a genuine guy, and I think he's a talented wrestler, but I think he... In terms of his way he's handling business, I think he's not doing himself any favors.
None whatsoever.
Anyway, it is what it is. But the reason I bring up ROH is because now we're going to try and crank things up. It's almost November, and I will be working the emails, the phones, the communication devices, and we'll try and get this nailed down and do our road to final battle. And bring some ROH talents aboard on the show and hear from them and see what's going on with that company. And as they head to what is essentially their WrestleMania and their big return to traditional pay-per-view, somewhere where the WWE is no more, or they are kind of, but they tell you if you watch them on pay-per-view, you're an idiot. So ROH will not be saying that. They want you to watch them on pay-per-view in December for Final Battle, and we're going to try and line up some guests and have some fun with that. And also, too, I don't know if we'll end up fitting this in the podcast or we'll do it separately, but we've kind of made it a tradition now. We get this big WWE business bomb dropped on us. Chris Harrington, we're going to hook up with him and try and... talk to him and see if he can make us understand all these numbers that Chris Walder has so much trouble with.
I'm a writer, okay? Math is never going to be my friend. I shouldn't even be saying this. I failed summer school math, okay? So that's when you know that no calculator on the planet is going to save your ass, and I'm a prime example of that.
Chris Walder admitting things about himself, that seems like a perfect way to bring this podcast to a close. Unless, Walder, would you like to admit anything else to our listening audience before we go?
I have no more pipe bombs in me, James. I'm all pipe bombed out.
Okay, it is Halloween. Are you going out as anything?
I'm going out as an Amir Johnson trade rumor. I think that's as scary as you can get here in Toronto.
Yeah, you're not going to be popular if Amir gets traded, let me tell you that.
I won't be.
The whole rock star status, it's all going to come. You know how they do that zombie walk in Toronto?
Yeah.
All the zombies are going to be looking for you.
Oh, they're walking dead, baby.
They're going to be hunting you down. And as for me, I am too old for the trick-or-treating and all of that. But, you know... hey, basketball's back, and we're excited about that. Our Raptors are 1-0 and heading to Florida for the weekend to face the Magic and suddenly the LeBron James-less Miami Heat, so that should be fun.
Always fun. I'm glad basketball is back. Gives me an alternative to professional wrestling, which continues to disappoint me. The Raptors always have a place in my heart until they disappoint me.
Yeah, well, you know, until proven otherwise, they can go... 82-0, Walder.
82-0.
All you
can only hope.
All you have to do is say it with me. Believe. Okay, that was terrible. We need to do that again.
Okay, fine.
I'll just say it because you made it too loud. So all you have to do, Chris Walder, is believe.
Thumbs in the air, baby!